The date is April 11th, 2001, and we're watching Joe Dirtie.
Don't try and church it up, son. Don't you mean Joe Dirt?
Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past that gosh darn nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Clem to my Joe.
What was I going to say? Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
What were like you going to say?
I was about to.
Are you going to try to pull out some walking again? We saw how much that one failed before.
Yeah, no, I was literally about to say welcome to I used to like this one. I was like, wait, what's my name?
So this week we're looking back at April 2001 when the movies and theaters were Blow, Along Came a Spider, Memento, Spy Kids, and of course our movie for today, Joe Dirt, which earned $31 million on a $17.7 million budget.
I think I can do the walk-in for Joe Dirt.
Yeah?
I don't know. Should I try it? I feel like it always goes well. What is he saying?
A warning for anyone who hasn't seen this movie. There are spoilers ahead.
Hey, I don't like your tone. What? What if we are? What if we're his family?
We're there.
No good. But anyways, as always, there is spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please press pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie as well, I do have several, actually seven to be exact. First two here. First one's Dig It, and the second one's Life's a Garden, Dig It.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
that's
that
it.
That is my favorite line from the movie.
Okay.
One of them.
Yeah. The third one is, this one's kind of clever, Join the Porta Party.
I like that one. That was fun.
Number four, He Came, He Cleaned, He Conquered.
That one is, well, there is just an odd thing about that one. And I'm even like, I'm looking at the movie poster right now. And it's just like, I never realized, like, I knew he was a janitor, but I didn't realize being a janitor was like such a big component of his character.
Yeah.
I don't actually think it is.
No.
But for some reason, that's what like a lot of the marketing centers around.
Yeah, he has two jobs as a janitor in this movie out of coincidence, but he has a lot of other jobs.
Yeah.
Well, number four, Keep on Mopping in the Free World.
Yeah, see, again, it's just...
Next up, we've got Trailer Trash, Wig Wearing, Acid Wash, Jean Lovin', Rock Concert, T-Shirt Sportin' Hero.
That's a lot of descriptors.
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, like, not a G to be seen. There are... None of those are ending in the letter G. They are all apostrophes. Yeah, we're sportin'. Yeah.
Nice.
And finally... And I think this is my personal favorite. I really like this one. His name's not Mud, but it's close.
That one's clever, yeah. I like that.
But those may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin for our 60-second synopsis.
All right. When a local radio producer observes what he believes to be the epitome of white trash in the form of his building's janitor, he brings a disheveled custodian and puts him on the air with shock jock Xander Kelly. Thus begins the saga of Joe Dirt, as Joe regales Xander and his audience with the tale of his search for the family who lost him at the Grand Canyon when he was 8 years old. Throughout his journey, Joe befriends a dog, a meteor, and meets and inspires a cast of characters with his good-natured optimism and can-do attitude. Will Joe realize his best friend is actually the love of his life? Will he finally discover the dark truth behind what happened at the Grand Canyon? Life's a Garden! Dig this episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. Yeah, so Joe Dirt, man. I mean, I've always loved Joe Dirt. And I mean, there are very few David Spade led comedies. I mean, you know, there's something like there's one called Lost and Found, where he's like this slimy guy that kidnaps a dog, mm-hmm. and then returns it to the woman to try to get a meet cute. Like, it's other than that, he's always in duos. He's with Adam Sandler or he's with Chris Farley. I mean, I love Tommy Boy, but this is one of the only times that, like, you've got a David Spade led comedy where David Spade is actually pretty hilarious. Like, I always thought that I've always struggled when it comes to David Spade.
Yeah.
Because I used to watch him in the era of Saturday Night Live, and I never found him all that funny. On shows like Just Shoot Me or Rules of Engagement, he's the annoying guy that you want to laugh at everyone else. Because he's just the annoying guy. But, I mean, there's something very endearing about Joe Dirt, and I fell in love with this movie the first time I saw it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think, for me, Joe Dirt is one of the... It's one of, like, the first movies I remember seeing in the theater. And it's also... Okay. It's along with Fast and the Furious, it was the... Those were the... Joe Dirt and Fast and the Furious were the first two DVDs I ever owned.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was like... You know, it was just one of those movies that I loved the first time I watched it. I remember when I got... I think I got them for Christmas or something like that, and I was psyched that I got Joe Dirt. And I still... I agree with you. Like, David Spade, you know, I don't particularly... I'm not that fond of him. Mm-hmm. I would never say I'm a David Spade fan, but I love this movie for sure.
Yeah. Now, with your reviews that you always do at the end of the show, I was hoping I was going to surprise you with a review. Because apparently this is in the top of Roger Ebert's least favorite movies of all time.
Oh, really?
And I looked up his review because I wanted to see if I could throw a review in for you if this guy hates it this much. And there was nothing that was, like, soundbitey about it that I could, you know, it would have been a long review to read. But when I was looking at that, I found out that he also did a review for Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser. And I'm like, what the shit?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the sequel to Joe Dirt?
No, Joe Dirt 2 is a movie. I remember seeing it. I remember seeing previews for it because I think it was on, like, Crackle.
Like, it's a Crackle, like, original.
Yeah, at like the, you know, it came out at like the dawn of like the height of streaming original content.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those movies where I saw the preview and I was just like, I will never watch this movie. It's like, there's only like a few movies I can say that about. Matrix Resurrections, for the record, is broaching up on this territory as we speak. But like, I will never watch Joe Dirt 2 just because, to me, Joe Dirt is a perfect, like, it's a perfect comedy. I think it's so funny, and the story ends in a good place.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be a sequel, and just in the research for this show, I was kind of, like, looking at it, I was like, ah, should I watch it? And then I saw there's, like, a time-traveling component to it, and I was immediately like, I'm never watching this movie, ever.
Well, let me tell you, I did watch it. and oh my god, it's a thing. It basically recycles so many of the jokes from the first movie,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, it hit the points of Joe Dirt that I absolutely love. The one thing I didn't understand the whole time, though, was why he had his mullet back when at the end of this movie we find out that he gets, like, those fucking cornrows or whatever.
Dreadlocks that Marley had.
Yeah. But, no, it was fun. But okay. It's definitely stupider. It's a cross between Wizard of Oz and It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
Yeah. With a little, like, it's funny. I wrote in my notes for this particular movie that this is like a white trash Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Yeah.
I realized that so much on this viewing that it's white trash Forrest Gump. And when you start the second movie, it opens with him telling his story to someone while waiting on a bench for a bus. And so it's like, okay, I was right. They see it themselves. It is white trash Forrest Gump. It was total Forrest Gump spoof. You have to take it for what it is.
I guess, like, my only question, what is... So, like, in this movie, it's all about, like, his parents and all that. Like, what is the central problem, or what's he trying to get to in the second one?
He doesn't feel like he's good enough for Brandy.
Okay.
Like, he's got a family, and he's got Brandy, and he just feels like she's always standing up for him, and that, like, what am I bringing to this equation? And he tries to be a hero to get something from the trailer that they left behind, a tiara that his daughter left behind. And there's a tornado coming, though. And so he gets to the trailer, and then all of a sudden it becomes Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a journey of self-discovery to find out what it is that makes him special, that Brandy loves about him. And he thinks that if he can go back in time and make all these millions of dollars, she'll love him more. I don't know. It doesn't have Kid Rock in it, though.
Dang.
It has Mark McGrath instead. Sugar Ray shows up.
Well, okay. I'm a little bit more intrigued now, so maybe I'll think about it. Maybe it's not on the list of never watch. It's probably never will, but might.
Well, let's jump into the 2001 original Joe Dirt, directed by Denny Gordon, who is a director that did a bunch of TV, and What a Girl Wants is another thing she did. But female director on this. I don't think we've had a lot of female directors on this show.
No.
So that's exciting to see. Produced by Robert Simmons and written by David Spade and Fred Wolf. Fred Wolf is the guy that plays the producer in Xander Kelly's. The guy that says, "You are eating off of it." That's who Fred Wolf is right there. Yeah, and we open this movie on Sweet Home Alabama because there's no better way to kick off Joe Dirt. I love the soundtrack of this movie. I gotta say, I mean, you know, he is a rocker through and through. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was just looking at it on Wikipedia, and it's a pretty sweet. I wouldn't mind going downloading these songs and making my own Joe Dirt mixtape. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised, though, that they didn't sneak a Kid Rock song into the movie. But there is at least, you know, the fact that You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet plays every time Kid Rock is on screen. So you do get to associate that song with him.
Yeah. And what a performance by Kid Rock. I mean, just like, what an amazing actor to just come into this movie. I'm surprised he didn't get an Oscar nod.
Oh, nod is the key word because, oh my God, why does he bob his head so much when is that a character thing or is that Kid Rock being uncomfortable doing acting? Like, yeah. He doesn't bob his head like that when he's on stage, does he?
I feel like he's like a pretty loose-necked guy. Like, the funny thing about this movie to me is I feel like if they didn't pick David Spade to play Joe Dirt, Kid Rock is probably the closest you would come to the living persona of Joe Dirt. Like, the guy he's one of the most white trash famous people I could think of.
Yeah. Ba wada ba da bang a bang, diggy diggy diggy, set the boogie, set up, jump the boogie. Oh, yeah. See? Kid Rock, he's my jam from back in. He's one of my guilty pleasures in my playlist.
For sure.
That's for sure. I like a few Kid Rock songs.
I had a few of his albums back in the day. It's funny, 2001 was a pretty big year for Kid Rock acting wise. He also had a part in Osmosis Jones in 2001.
Oh, that's a deep cut. Good job on that one. You pulled that one out of nowhere. Holy shit! Yeah, that was a good one.
Funny enough, I've seen Osmosis Jones way back in the day. I don't really remember it, but.
Yeah,
his role, I guess you could almost say he was playing himself because his character name was Kidney Rock.
Okay,
so
right.
Maybe he was like a kidney stone?
I guess so. That must be what it was. I mean, I do have the claim to fame that I've seen Kid Rock play live in concert, so...
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, that was part of my Woodstock 99 experience.
You went to Woodstock 99?
Yeah, I went to Woodstock 99, yeah. It was, we road tripped it, five of us in my little two-door Nissan Sentra, and we drove all the way there because it was in New York. road trip the whole thing. There was the one guy, the smallest guy in our crew, and he had to sit in the back, in the middle, the whole way, like 120 hours. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get too off topic, I guess. I watched that. There's that documentary about Woodstock 99 and what a shit show it was.
Oh, it was.
And I was just like, man, I can't. I remember being in high school and, like, I love Limp Bizkit and Korn and all those new metal bands are, like, my favorite bands at the time. And I remember, I think I had the Woodstock 99, like, soundtrack or whatever, like, the live soundtrack for a while. And I remember thinking, oh, it'd be so cool to go there. And then I was watching this documentary and it just sounded awful. It sounded just like there was oceans of shit and porta potties dumped all over the place and people like literally just losing their minds and going insane.
Ah, well, you know, I had a great time. I was 20, so
nice. it's a good age to be a Woodstock 99, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. So, okay, at one point in the movie, we see Joe Dirt go back to, like, his apartment, which is actually a boiler room.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the radio station?
That was what I thought, but then it, like, the beginning doesn't make sense because, when he rolls up in his car.
Yeah, when we open the movie, he's driving to work.
But no, it really did seem like he lived there. Not that it was just, like, a kind of office thing where he could just go take a nap or a siesta if he wanted to.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've always wondered that about this movie is,
continuity error.
Yeah.
The opening scene of this movie is that the whole Joe Dirt with the conversation.
Don't try and church it up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's just, that's like so, it's one of those iconic comedy scenes. It's just so funny that he would be like, I mean, everything around the name Joe Dirt, like the fact that, you know, he already knows that's not his, like, family last name. It's just the name his dad gave him. Yeah. Like, at any point, similar to, like, how they talk about his haircut, like, you know, why didn't you just get it cut? And you can tell he's never thought of it.
Thought of it, yeah.
And it's like, he also must have just never thought about, like, why don't I just get my, or, like, legally change my name?
Mm-hmm.
Or even just have an alias?
Yeah. I've got a name for this car, Rusty. The security guard there is Kevin Farley, who is one of Chris Farley's brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then there's later on after Clem gets gunned down, the cop that is outside that is John Farley, who is Chris Farley's other brother.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so David Spade got his buddy's brothers into this movie. So
Chris Farley died in 99? Is that right?
Something like that, yeah, 98 or 99, yeah. Yeah, so I did read an original casting for Joe's parents was Roseanne and Gary Busey.
That would have been something else.
Yeah. So we go into the radio station and we've got Dennis Miller. Fuck, Dennis Miller is a funny guy. I love Dennis Miller, but apparently he filmed all his stuff in one day. But I really appreciate how this movie uses the narration. Like, a lot of times a narration can be annoying in a movie or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I love moments, like I said with Fred Wolf, the moment where he's like, you were eating off of it. Like, I love, or the moment when Dennis Miller is like, you know, we've got this guy talking about feelings over here and all I can think about is Brandy and her well manicured backyard, you know. And it's just like, you know, like it makes me want to hear more of what Joe is actually telling him if the Xander Kelly can get this picture in his mind of Brandy's ass, because I mean she's so fine.
That was one thing I noticed on this watch. Like, I really enjoy I think using the radio show is like the perfect tool to have, you know, the pseudo Forrest Gump story, like you said. But there are moments like that where I was just like, how do you know what her ass looks like? How do you know that she's hot? And why, knowing who Joe is, why would you think that she's hot?
Yeah, right? Well, and Joe's not going to talk about her that way because he doesn't see her that way yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's not going to be like this stunner chick with amazing tits or whatever. Like, no, it's going to be my pal Brandy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I love the moment when Joe's talking about, I think it's after he leaves from the juvenile home and he's walking down the train tracks and listening to Bob Seger, and, you know, Xander cuts in and is like, no, it would have been like Leif Garrett and it would have been more like this.
Yeah.
And it switches from the rock to the, like, the dance pop. And
the... I keep on dancing. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, of course, though, that points out, though, that this movie is awfully homophobic.
Yeah.
There are, you know, is this queer? Is this queer? You know, there's a lot of, you know,
that's a good
language like that.
Another one of my favorite lines is when he's like, what did he say? He's like, they're locked and loaded and looking for chickies.
Oh, my favorite is... I got a backup mic right here. 1, 2, check, check. They're both working, and guess what? They don't like no feedback.
Or when he's at the alligator pit, he's like, what is, he's like, I got a match for you. My face, your ass. I mean, your ass, my face.
What's up? Yeah. Or just go over there and practice falling down. I'll be there in a minute. Oh man, you know, we're just quoting lines. Let's get some more out of our system. You know what, Colin, let's do a little I used to like this one piece theater.
All right, let's roll.
So Colin, I have sent you a scene. One of my favorite for quotes is the his list of different kinds of fireworks when he's talking to Kicking Wing. Mm-hmm. So I have sent you the script for that section. So yeah, this is the scene between Joe Dirt and Kicking Wing talking about the good stuff. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be Joe Dirt or do you want to be Kicking Wing?
I'll be Joe.
You'll be Joe? Okay. Okay, so kick it off whenever you're ready.
I see you got them snakes and sparklers, but where's the good stuff?
The good stuff? This is the good stuff. Snakes and sparklers.
Are you nuts, dude? You need stuff that explodes, goes boom!
Why's that?
Might as well ask, why's the tree good? Why's the sunset good? Why are boobs good? Man, firecrackers! You stick them in mailboxes, you drop them in toilets, shove them up a bullfrog's asses?
I would never do that, because I'm going to be a veterinarian.
Well, there you go! Someone shoves an M80 up a bullfrog's butt and blows him to pieces. He comes back to you to fix it. You win twice, brother. It's good biz. So you're going to tell me that you don't have no black cats, Roman candles, or screaming memes?
No.
Well, come on, man. You don't got no lady fingers, fuzz buttles, snicker bombs, church burners, finger blasters, gut busters, zippity doodahs, or crap flappers?
No, I don't.
You're going to stand there owning a fireworks stand and tell me you don't have no whistling bungholes, no spleen splitters, whisker biscuits, honky lighters, husker do's, husker don'ts, cherry bombs, nifty dazers, with or without the scooter stick, or one single whistling kitty chaser?
No, because snakes and sparklers are the only ones I like.
Well, that might be your problem. It's not what you like, it's the consumer.
Yes, I used to like this One Piece theater.
I was very happy when I saw that. That's one of my favorite scenes too. I love Kicking Wing.
Now, to take a little bit of a quick trip back to Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser. I mean, just about everybody reprises their role. Like, you've got Christopher Walken, and you also get Adam Beach coming back as Kicking Wing, even though his is more of a glorified cameo. But they do almost the exact same thing, because in this part of the movie, Kicking Wing has become a big drug lord. And so it's like, and he likes pot and aspirin. Those are the only two he likes. So you're going to tell me you ain't got no crystal meth or the, you know, but he, at one point he brings up Husker Du's and he says, no, wait, that's a firework. No, it's both. I think you'd like the second one. I'm sorry. And you know, if I send you down a wrong path and you watch it and you hate it, I'm sorry I sent you down that path. But I enjoyed myself because I love the character of Joe Dirt. I mean, okay, you know, problematic elements aside, you know, like that I found on this watch. And really, that movie is made in 2015, and they have some of the same homophobic jokes.
which I'm surprised that it still sticks around that long. But that aside, yeah, I love the character of Joe Dirt. I mean, the hapless lucky loser.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the it is kind of like, I can't get the Forrest Gump analogy out of my head now that you've mentioned it, because it is they're almost endearing in the exact same way. It's just that, like, hopeful,
lovable loser,
that lovable,
yeah,
like,
optimistic,
hope, yep, optimistic, like, person, uh-huh, who's just trying to find their way in the world
and just not very smart, just not quite there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, like, it is funny to think about the homophobia. Like, and it's not like anybody gets, like, I don't think any bad, like, slurs that I can remember, but it's just that.
The one wrestler at, which wrestler is that? Is that Triple H at the oil job?
Oh, no, that's, he is a wrestler, but he was never famous. That's Tyler Mane. And he played played Sabretooth in X-Men.
Oh, okay, right. But yeah, I think he calls him a homo.
Yeah.
I think that's as big as it gets. I'm trying to remember if he drops an F-bomb, but...
There's definitely somebody calls him queer at one point,
yeah,
because he's like, he does the whole, like,
are these
queer?
Are these queer? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, and there's that one when Chicken Wing gives him a hug, and then it cuts back to the radio station, he's like, that hug was totally, like, one side, like, non-consensual, man. He kind of snuck it up on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good stuff. Funny. I mean, they balance it out with the incest jokes, too, so.
Well, yeah, let's talk a second about Jamie Presley, who, I mean, she doesn't get a whole lot in this movie, but her stuff is just absolutely legendary. Like, here's one other thing that I don't understand about David Spade is he's always playing some sort of womanizer.
Yeah.
in any of the shit that he ever does. And it's my understanding that David Spade actually kind of is a bit of a womanizer. And it's like, how?
Yeah,
but in this movie, I mean, he has these two absolutely stunning women that are, like, all into him, and it's like, how the impossibly hot love interest, like, you know.
Yeah. Especially, like, Jamie Presley, when it's the carny thing and you see him there, like, doing the whole, like, shirt off carny act, where it's just,
oh,
that
my god
thing, and you're like you're finding that sexy.
That whole slow motion, oh, with the tilt-a-whirl, that is one of the funniest moments. He plays it, like, you know, like the pointing at her with the cigarette in his hand, and like, oh yeah, and oh. Joe Dirt the carny is definitely one of my favorite moments of the movie, is or one of my favorite jobs of the movie, you
yeah
know, whatever, you know, janitor, whatever, but no, him as a carny, that's great, when he's sitting there spraying the dishes with Pam, so that
maybe if somebody does the, if unit, maybe one day UNICEF will get into the carnival business.
Yeah. And then the exact same line is thrown at him from Kevin Nealon in, like, the next scene.
Yeah,
you know, well, maybe one day UNICEF will get into the auto mechanic business, but
that whole, the whole thing with spraying, or like when he's talking to the guy throwing it, is like, it's just like perfect comedy to not show the guy until he's walking away and you see it's this old man with an oxygen tank. I don't know what it is about it, but it's just, it makes it so much funnier.
Yeah, you better run. Yeah. But yeah, he is spraying those dishes with Pam, and I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
Interested to see how many you have in this one, because I feel like it could be a lot.
Not as many as you think.
Oh.
No, always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Joe Dirt is brought to you by Pam, Dodge, Plymouth, GMC, Pontiac, and Ford Vehicles, Auto Trader Magazine, National Enquirer, and People Magazines, plus the fictional magazines of Dang and Mullet Monthly, and the fictional book of Life's a Garden, Dig It, Words of Wisdom by Joe Dirt, Cracker Jacks, Radio Flyer, Pepsi and Mountain Dew, Skoal Chewing Tobacco, Snap-on Tools, and Kangle. Plus, the fictional companies of 98.6 KXLA, Mary B's, Weezas, Heavenly Fried Chicken, Red's Western Wear, Fireworks, Snakes and Sparklers, and Molar World. Plus, way too many band t-shirts. I mean, maybe that's why you thought that there would be a lot, is because he's always wearing a different band t-shirt, and I just didn't bother keeping track of them. I'm like, oh, music, rock music from the 70s. I guess I could also say that it's brought to you by Space Peanuts. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Oh, the turd. The Boeing bomb. I read is actually a thing. It's not very common, but it is a real thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that was like. I can't imagine what that would be like. I would just assume that they would try to drop it over, like, a large body of water or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
If they have any control, they must have some sort of control over how where they drop it. But
maybe, yeah. I don't know. I just, I did Google it because I was interested, and I read an article about one that fell somewhere in, like, I don't know, White Horse or something like that.
Okay.
Somewhere up north, yeah. So.
Yeah. This movie... Maybe another reason why I like this or love this movie when I was in junior high. Yeah, I guess. Junior high would have been all the poop humor. Like, I remember, like, thinking that the meteorite was so funny. But then when he finds the quote,
the septic tank,
the quote unquote nuke.
Yeah.
And the cops come and knock the cap off, and that nasty looks like poop milkshake comes out.
Yeah. Oh, why is it still going? I got the poopy on me. Oh, like, I don't know why I should love that so much, but I do. And I mean, I love, like, as terrible as the effects are in the moment where he's like, let's shoot firecrackers at it, and he has his fantasy and the nuke, and he dusts away, and it's like, it's terribly rendered CGI, but I mean, it's still charming. Yeah. I still laugh when I see that one too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's funny too. Like, you know, you should kind of like not feel bad. I mean, it is funny, but with the poop and the septic tank, it's like, it's still like, it's still somehow endearing that even when Joe tries to be kind of like a bad guy, like he's doing a bad thing.
Yeah, holding the bank hostage.
And I mean,
or whatever.
And the thing is, like, he actually thinks it's a nuke.
Yeah.
Based on his dream, so it's actually, he's doing a pretty terrible thing.
Yeah.
But then it ends so badly for him that you still are like, you're still left kind of feeling for him.
Well, and I like that it even says biohazard on it, and he still thinks it's a nuke. Like, there's no other signage on it at all, except for the biohazard sticker.
Yeah.
So, one thing I don't understand is why so many people in this movie have gone uncredited. In my research, Kevin Nealon is uncredited, Carson Daly is uncredited, Rosanna Arquette, who is Charlene the Gator Farmer.
Yeah.
And Joe Don Baker, who plays Don, Brandy's dad, is uncredited. Like, do you think they were embarrassed to have their names attached? Like, Brandy's dad is a big character. They had to CGI his leg out. I mean, he was significant enough to spend special effects money on, and he's uncredited in this movie for some reason.
Yeah, that's odd. I don't really know what goes into me. I would have just assumed, like, if you have a speaking role, you're credited, unless you can just choose. It would be one of those things. Like, I know that you could choose to not have your name. So maybe they did. Maybe they thought it was a garbage movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It does seem strange that those two characters, and like, I could see Carson Daly or whatever. Like, it's just, he's kind of just,
yeah, he plays himself. He's there for one scene. Yeah.
But those two, yeah, I find it interesting that they wouldn't have been.
And we do in the movie also have Brian Thompson making his hat trick with movies for us. He's the guy that plays Buffalo Bob. But from Mortal Kombat Annihilation and Three Amigos, he's in both of those. So
he looks so I don't know why he looks so super creepy as Buffalo Bob. Like he just looks so weird dressed up as a normal guy because he has this weird box head body thing going on. He just looks like, and every time I see him, all I see is Shao Kahn. That's who he is to me at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, it does lead to another one of our really homophobic moments where we're making fun of Silence of the Lambs. I mean, did they get away with that one because it's spoofing an Oscar-winning movie?
I just love how I wish they would have spent more time, elaborating on the rumors.
Yeah.
Because everybody just talks about, oh, I heard you. Well, I think the one lady says that he put something up his butt or whatever, yeah. But
what?
There's just a lot of rumor.
Yeah, that's true. But it is a fun runner to have from that point on in the movie, though, is, oh, I hear that Buffalo Bill did some weird things to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you looked into anything about how they did the dog's nuts. Frozen.
No, I did not. I did not stumble across anything that talks about the nuts. No, I mean,
I find that scene very hard to watch.
Yes,
just because trying to imagine it and what that would be like and what that might feel like seems very painful. But it's also so funny when Brandy comes out. She's like, "I'll get a fork and all this."
Yeah. No. No. And then she comes out with the shears. It's like, how dumb is Brandy? Like, I don't understand why the introduction of Brandy makes her seem that dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's another one that's always kind of bothered me. Is it's like, the joke isn't that funny when she comes out with the shears. I guess maybe it's because I'm a guy. And I think about, no, like, is that what it's supposed to be? Is that she's such an innocent girl that she doesn't understand that just chopping them off is going to be a problem?
I think, to be honest, it has nothing to do with her as a character at all. I think it's just like the visual of like taking shears or a fork or like all these other painful things to a man's, even though it's a male dog's testicles. It's just like the visual gig. But I do agree, like, when you think about it, you're like, well, it doesn't really actually fit into her character at all, because her character is actually, like, pretty smart and caring and would, like, realize those things.
Oh, yeah. We'll use a spatula instead. I do I do love the popping sound, though, when he does finally remove them.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really understand. Well, I guess he blames Charlie for not saving him. But like, it's not really Charlie's fault. Like, how? Like, it, and there's no other situation where we see that this dog is trained to like just know, like to know what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then also, it's like Charlie shows up, and then only minutes. Like, I was trying to figure out, what is the timeline between.
How long has Charlie been missing?
Yeah, because it's like he shows up and it only seems like it's been a few hours.
Yeah.
And then the dad shows up right afterwards. Like, he would have had to have been found and had gone into surgery. And I'm pretty sure that you don't just get your leg chopped off and are discharged in the same hour.
Yeah, there's probably a few days in hospital. Yeah. Yeah.
I also feel like if he were to have got run over by a train and his leg severed, the chances are pretty high that he would have not survived that if nobody was around.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems that way.
But maybe I'm overthinking things.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Joe Dirt. Like, so there are two lines in this movie, though. One of them that I absolutely love the line delivery of, and one that I absolutely hate the line delivery of. One that I love for some reason, I don't know why, is the kids that are flattening coins on the railroad tracks. And the one guy goes, "It's so flat." I don't know why I love that one. But the one I hate, I don't know if you can guess the one I hate, but it's, Oh no, killer mustard gas.
Yeah, that, I have to assume for that shot they were like, kid, we've only got one take, make it good, and he just gave it his best shot.
Yeah,
because that delivery was pretty, it's pretty piss poor.
Yeah. And he grabs his neck.
And also it's like, what were you trying to make that you ended up mistakenly just making mustard gas?
I don't know. But I just don't understand how you can even identify it that fast. It's like, oh, yeah. Mustard gas. That's what this is. Oh. Oh, no. Killer mustard gas. Oh. Yeah, there are some other scenes that I always keep forgetting about whenever I watch this movie. One of them is like when he spends the night in the insecticide.
Yeah,
and gets all stoned on insecticide and then has to give the police sketch. I always forget about that part. It looks like Father Time and Richard Ramirez is what his parents look like.
I couldn't remember. Like, I always remember Kickin' Wing, and I remember a lot of, like, the first stuff with Brandy and Kid Rock and the stuff with Christopher Walken. But I forgot, there are points of this movie, like, I forgot how he gets lost in the hot air balloon and basically, like, travels across the country.
Yeah.
And then watching it this go around, I was like, why wouldn't anybody shoot it down? For one, but then also, how could he have survived for that long in the air without food?
True.
And water and all that seems strange.
Again, you're trying to bring logic into Joe Dirt, so.
I do. One of my favorite line deliveries is when he's talking to the woman who ends up selling him the Hemi. And she's talking about her husband, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry about him dying." And she's like, "It's okay, I killed him."
That's right. I forgot about that one. I totally forgot that I just realized that I missed something in Sponsorship Corner.
Uh-oh.
You just reminded me. I must have got distracted when I was writing my notes. Anyway, when he crashes in the molar, the name of the oil place that he ends up working is called Scotch Oil. And apparently Scotch Oil is a real company, and it was something that was owned by Chris Farley's parents. And so they name dropped it in this movie. So that was something that I missed in Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, but yeah, you just totally reminded me though with the cross country molar world balloon ride that he went on.
I'd also never noticed when he's working on the oil rig and he's pulling up that pipe or whatever it is, and he like takes it off and the oil starts spraying everywhere, and he's like, "Somebody help me, I'm new
I don't know what to do."
terrible OH&S practices to just let an untrained person deal with live oil.
Yeah. Why is day two of his story so much shorter than day one and day three? Because day one starts, you know, with the beginning of his story and goes all the way to, like, meeting Kicking Wing.
Mm-hmm.
But day two is, like, basically just the Tilt-A-Whirl. Like just the Carney stuff, just the Jamie Presley stuff. That's all he talks about on day two. But it's such a short section of the movie.
Well, yeah, I feel like the radio mechanic kind of, it starts falling apart at the point when you realize, like, oh, somebody should be looking to see now if they could actually, like, find his parents to, like, set up this reunion. Like, I don't know that it would, I mean, I guess, like, how long is the radio show?
Yeah, I figured it's a Howard Stern type thing, so I figured it was, like, most of the morning.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we don't know what their schedule is. Maybe they had more time and all that stuff. But I did find, like, I didn't even realize, to be honest, that it was 3 days. I thought it was only 2 days. But yeah. Now that I think about it, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, because day two, he talks about meeting Jamie Presley's character in the whole, I'm your sister, I'm your sister, I'm your sister. Oh, I'm just kidding, folks. And the phones are lighting up. And then they're like, you know, well, we'll leave it there for today. And then he goes home to his janitor closet or his boiler room and phones Brandy and says, I haven't even gotten to the sad part of the story yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, just day one is so much longer.
Yeah.
They should have made Kicking Wing and Jamie Presley day two. I keep calling him Jamie Presley, but
I think the reason that I'm getting confused is because like when it cuts to the people who are listening to this show, I feel like they don't change costumes or their scenarios.
No, they don't.
They're always like they seem to be like on the same day the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably why I'm getting confused.
Yeah. That is, I mean, no attention to detail there. I mean, yeah, they should have had different costumes for the different people. But I mean, you bang them all out in a couple of hours with all those different reaction shots and, you know, and you can put them anywhere you want in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard things like I listen to Office Ladies and stuff like that, and I've heard things about the fact that some of their continuity, sometimes they go in and like change the color of someone's shirt and tie to make sure because they've moved a talking head around. Yeah. So in the talking head, yeah, they'll change. Yeah, they've done it with Andy a couple of times, apparently.
Hmm. Who is the guys who play, like, who ends up playing Joe's parents? I know the dad, he always plays, like, the gruff, like, usually he's more of, like, an army type.
Well, I remember like, he was in Road Trip. He was DJ Qual's dad in Road Trip.
Right.
Yeah, I forgot to write down their names, of course. Fred Ward, I think, is the dad. I don't know who the woman is at all. But yeah, I remember he's very much he's the asshole dad of DJ Qualls and Road Trip.
Caroline Aaron is his mom. I don't know her.
Yeah. No idea.
I always know Young Joe. That's Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle.
Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle, totally. I guess all we've done so far for Christopher Walken, for the most part, is a terrible Christopher Walken impression. But, I mean, we got to give major shout-out to Clem in this movie. We haven't talked enough about Clem.
Yeah.
I've always loved the moment when he's walking down the hall, talking to himself, just before he rescues them from the killer mustard gas, where he's, you know, the whole bit about, I'll stab you in the face with a soldering iron.
Soldering iron.
Yeah. Boom, get out of Sodak. I don't know, but...
You talking to me?
but I completely forgot about the boner joke until I started watching it again with the him and his body bag.
Yeah, I remember that's another one of those things. That's like 14-year-old junior high humor.
Yep.
I feel like... It's funny because I remember, I feel like Clem, in my mind, was a bigger part of the movie, but he's actually like just a very, and I also didn't like pick up, I don't remember picking up until this movie, how like the Silver Town or whatever they call it is such, it's this like, you know, it's just this like mecca of like goodness, and then like everybody's going to move to Silver Town and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I like Clem. I like when he, same as you, that scene when he's walking down the hallway is probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie as well.
Yeah.
And then when...
And no, it was Joe Dirt! Joe Dirt rescued everyone! Oh, yeah. Well, thank God for Joe Dirt then.
As much as I like the movie, it is hard... Where it kind of deviates from Forrest Gump to me is like, how does Joe go so long without realizing, like, his parents are trash? Like, how do you go so long being like, oh, I just got separated from them at the grand... Like, I get that it was, like, 1981, but I'm pretty sure even in 1981, nobody's abandoning their kid at the Grand Canyon, no less.
Yeah, you should have realized a long time ago that you were ditched. Like, it should not have taken that long.
Yeah.
But that's his, you know, innocent naivete that he's got going on, you know?
You always have, never have no in your heart and all that.
Yeah, that's right. Gotta keep on keeping on. Is this where you want to be when Jesus comes back?
Making fun of little Joe Dirt. I do also like that part when he kind of stands up to Xander that way, because Xander comes in so hot as an asshole when Joe shows up, but I do like that little pushback where he's like, look, like I like Joe's confidence in himself, even though he is kind of like a fool.
Yeah, like I don't have to sit here and do this. I mean, I can just leave. Okay, let me try a new tact. You know, but of course, one of my favorite Xander lines is the, are you telling me you're so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair just grows in all white trashy like that? I mean, you know, I feel Joe Dirt's pain. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, I'm usually rocking a goatee, but it's only been in the last several years that I've actually been able to grow a goatee. And just for shits and giggles with pandemic going on, you know, wearing a mask so much, I decided to see what I could grow for a beard. And my facial hair basically, like when it comes to my cheeks, like my goatee, I've got a solid goatee game. But my facial hair, when it comes to my cheeks, it basically goes to a point where I need to shave. It never crosses the threshold of becoming a beard. It's like I go from clean shaven to it looks like you need to shave, any better.
it takes a long time of being uncomfortable to grow a beard, because you do reach that. I've only really grown like a true beard, I think, once or twice. And the reason why is because it's like I always reach that uncomfortable spot where, like you say, it just looks like you just look kind of disheveled and like you need to shave and it's itchy and you like have to like power through that to get to like the beard phase.
I'm talking about like this is after 5 months.
Maybe you're just not meant to have a beard.
No, I've just got sparse cheek hair. It wasn't patience. I'm like, no, I'm wearing a mask. I don't care how stupid it looks because my face is covered up. That was the only reason is covered up. That was the only reason I went for it. And it's patchy at best.
Yeah, every time I watch Joe Dirt and I hear that, I'm reminded of one of my high school friends had like a similar. He can grow a beard now, but back in the day, it literally just grew in patches.
Yeah,
like and in like weird ways where it was like splotchy, and it was like there'd be areas with no hair, and then you would just have like a circle patch of hair, and then it was like it was so bizarre. I'd never seen anything like it. I like. Do you think that his dad shaved his hair, his wig into a mullet? Because I was trying to think, like his dad has the same haircut.
Yeah.
And so is it just a product of, like, did he get a mullet wig or did they just get a wig for him and then shave the mullet into it?
I feel like they found a wig that happened to be a mullet. That's how I've always pictured it. Because if his dad cut it into a mullet, then he would have known. Well, I mean, I know he was a baby, but I was thinking, you know, he would have known that it was cut and he might have thought to cut it even more. I don't know.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. You should hear this guy on the radio. Xander asked him why he hasn't ever cut his hair, and you could tell he's just never thought of it before. When Joe goes to find his parents, like when he gets the list of all the people that the tour bus company had that day, the names that he's reading off are the same ones from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. The Adams. Oh, really? Adams, Adam Lee.
That's funny. Yeah. I also forgot, I also really like that guy when Joe finds his childhood home and there's the neighbor who comes out and he's like, oh, hey, Mo!
Hey, Mo! Yeah, the guy from Waterboy.
Hey, Mo! You want to see homos naked? Homeboy, make it! A little homophobia, I guess.
There we go. There's another one. See, it's an onion. You just keep peeling back layers, and you just keep finding more homophobia.
Oh, man.
I mean, even when he's, like, lifting the dog's nuts off the porch, and he's like, I'm not going to look here.
Yeah.
Why does he, with the gator wrestling, I've always wondered the idea of the choice of having the cigarette with the really long ash on it. Because, I mean, you know, I'm proud to say that I am now 7 months without a real cigarette. I used to be a smoker, but I know.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you. But I know that when you get a cigarette where the ash is that long, it really doesn't take much to knock it off. And I mean, he's got his head in the mouth with the cigarette with the long ash. I just don't understand what joke they're going for by visually giving him the cigarette with the really long ash. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's just like a white trash ism. Yeah.
I just sit here and think, like, I could just sit here and quote the movie. Yeah. I don't have a lot to say about the movie, but I love this movie. I just, you know, like, I could just sit here and quote it. So, I don't know. You got anything else?
No, I'm the same. It's kind of like, that's kind of the hallmark, I think, of a really funny movie to me, is how many quotes can you pull forth from it?
Yeah, there you go. Well, we end the movie where they beat Kid Rock with a drag race, and they splash Brandy's asshole dad. So we've got all this closure on all the moments of Joe's story. And they set off their big fireworks and they drive off into the sunset. And the end. That is Joe Dirt, originally titled The Adventures of Joe Dirt. I don't know why they changed it to Joe Dirt. But I remember the first trailer I ever saw for this movie. It was The Adventures of Joe Dirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One of the things I read on Wikipedia was that David Spade was trying for a while to make an animated TV series of Joe Dirt, which I feel like, wouldn't that, like, how did that not come to be? I feel now I feel like it would fit right in. I'm surprised it hasn't. David Spade, if you're listening to this podcast, you should definitely go pitch that idea to somebody again and get Joe Dirt the animated series off the ground.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Colin, IMDb Joe Dirt scored a 6.0 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 20. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 10% on the tomato meter. That must be where Roger Ebert's review is sitting. And has an audience rating of 63%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, he has no skull. How often does he get hit in the head? Oh, at the very end, what does he get hit in the head with at the very end?
The bridge.
That makes him change the, the bridge, right? That's right. Like bunching jumping into a bridge. Hit us with some reviews.
I was shocked to see 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, that is fucking...
Yeah.
Unreal.
That's mean. Yeah. That's just mean.
That's a lie. That's fake news. Andrew M. gives the movie 0.5 out of 5.
Oh, shit.
And says, I cannot imagine what kind of brain-dead idiot would find this amusing. This is perhaps the most degrading, ridiculous, cringe-inducing pieces of poo I've ever seen in my life. I would leave this 0 stars if I could. There is nothing good about this. Anyone who likes it is balding AF.
Okay.
Well, Andrew, while I am semi-balding, I disagree with you heartily.
I've still got a luxurious head of hair, yeah. So fuck you, Andrew. Fuck you.
Garrett D. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, a never-gets-old cult classic comedy and pivotal movie role of David Spade's career. The absurdity of Joe's retelling of his journey across America is pure mindless fun, and the characters he meets along the way are memorable and charming. Infinitely quotable and has a heart of gold, this critic rating is blasphemous. I could not agree more.
Absolutely.
Lucas A says 5 out of 5 stars, best movie I have ever watched in my entire existence, and I am 78 years old.
Nice. Willie Nelson out there watching it.
Yeah. And then lastly, we have Matt D, who gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, many critics will say this is a juvenile movie. It is. Nothing especially clever about it, but all of us that saw the movie were laughing out loud for most of the movie. That's what counts. If you want to switch your brain off and laugh for 90 minutes or so, this movie works. And those are my reviews for this week.
Right on. Yeah, I think the last guy there kind of hit it. I mean, 3.5 out of 5, but like absolutely glowing review. And I have to say, I mean, that's how I feel about this movie. Objectively, I know it's a terrible movie, but it makes me laugh so much. I mean, I think it's well structured. I think it's, you know, like it's I went too far when I said objectively it's a terrible movie. It's not a terrible movie, but I can understand why it's not a great movie.
Like it's not cinema.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Like it's poo jokes and stupid, you know, white trashisms, but I mean, this is right in my wheelhouse, and I don't know if I can really say anything bad about Joe Dirt. I mean, I tried to pick it apart today, and so much of it is just it's Joe Dirt. And you can't think too much about it because that's what it is. You're getting a guy whose mullet is permanently attached to his head. You know, like that's the character you're getting. But he is a lovable character, and no matter what, like this is one of the roles that I like David Spade the most in. Because even though I love a movie like Tommy Boy, in Tommy Boy, he's supposed to be the one that you don't like.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least this, though, he's the lead of the movie, and he holds his own, and he still makes me laugh, and I love Joe Dirt, and it's my guilty pleasure. It's one that I'm happy to say that I love, even though I probably shouldn't.
No, you should. You should. Like, I would say that, you know, despite some minor continuity errors and some homophobia that I could do without.
Yeah.
I would say that it's objectively a great movie. Like, I think that the plot and the story flow really, really well. I think that Joe Dirt is a really lovable and attractive, I don't mean attractive in like looks, I just mean like he's a good character that like immediately makes you interested and you want to get behind.
Yeah.
And weirdly on this watch, I would say that the character that the only relationship that I find kind of odd is the relationship between him and Brandy. But I mean like all the relationships with like the people that he meets along the way, whether it's like Kick and Wing, Clem, the two women, like the Gator lady and the Jill, they're kind of really fast, like they swap over that really fast, but it's like even still they're still like the one thing I thought about the movie is that it never drags.
That's
like,
true.
There's no
he's always going from one adventure to another.
Yeah, there's no part of the movie that I feel like I could do without. The closest that it gets is the Buffalo Bob, or is it Bill? Whatever.
Buffalo Bob, yeah.
Buffalo Bob stuff, where you're kind of just like, oh, that was a weirdly, like, out of place. But it's still, like, whatever. He's always, like, on to something next. And so, like, the movie, I find, it's like you turn it on and it just goes. And it's just, it's over really fast.
You know, the one part that I've always found that drags that I feel like I could do without is the sad music little bit where he's going back to his boiler room.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
that's always one of these like little 2 minute sections where it's just like,
yeah,
okay, great, and then it's back into the radio station.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, this movie definitely has great performances. That's definitely one of the big things that carries this movie through. That it helps you look past the holes in the continuity and all that sort of stuff, because Christopher Walken's just out there doing his Christopher Walken thing, but he's always so engaging when he's doing his Christopher Walken thing. But everyone else's performances, like from Xander Kelly to the Gator Lady. I mean, they're just, they're all these fun characters that you fall in love with really fast because they are so well portrayed. You know, Kicking Wing, like you said, you know, I love Kicking Wing. He's awesome.
Yeah, like I think that every character is a true defined and very different character one to the next. And it's like, weirdly, even though Joe himself is a character, he's almost like the straight man most often. And it's like, people are like, it's just how people are being played against him.
Yeah.
And it's, and yeah, it's like, it's always shocking because like we said at the beginning, I don't particularly find David Spade funny in most other things.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of, I would say he's kind of just like mediocre in other things that I've seen him. But I think that in this movie, for whatever reason, maybe it's because he wrote it.
Maybe.
But it's like, it just really works. And it just seems like even he has like such a clear vision of what he's doing. Like he's not just the womanizer.
No, but they're all falling at his feet.
But they're
anyway,
all falling at his feet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, I have nothing bad to say about this movie, unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know, but I just think it remains one of my favorites, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, one of the only things I will say about it is that some of the stuff doesn't hold up in 2021, but, you know, I can't be woke about absolutely everything. I gotta still laugh at a movie like Joe Dirt. I mean, I, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, there we go. That is Joe Dirt. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is go and give us a review on whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on. For the first dozen or so episodes, I kept saying Spotify, and Spotify you couldn't rate, but now you can. So if you're a Spotify listener, you can go rate us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it and give us 5 stars and a review. Those reviews, they help it drive us up the charts. They help us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become a producer of this show, well, just go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become a Patreon supporter and become an executive producer of our show and get a shout out on our show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And don't forget to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Instagram, we have Facebook, we have Twitter. Go on there and give us some likes, comments, and shares. If you want to email us, you can do so by emailing IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.